Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Geek Vibes Live is rated G for geek.
Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome back to another awesome episode of Geek Vibes Live Interview. For today's interview, I'm your host, Tia Fabi, and soon we will be talking to the showrunner and co-creator of the new Netflix series Daybreak, Aaron Eli Collette. I don't necessarily know if I'm saying his name right, but once he gets on air, we'll make sure that way I don't make too much of a fool of myself. For those listening, Daybreak actually premiered yesterday on Netflix, which is pretty awesome. So let's talk to the man himself. Aaron, how are you?
Hey, I have Aaron Eli Collette on the phone.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Hey, Aaron, how are you?
I'm awesome. How are you doing?
Doing very well. My name's Tia, just in case you didn't know, but I wanted to make sure before we go any further how I say your name correctly, because I don't want to make a fool out of myself.
I so appreciate that. It's such a strange spelling. It's Collette.
Collette, but I got the Aaron part right, right?
Aaron is correct. It's you know... I was born in the 70s, and my mom wanted to be super cool, and so she was like, I'm going to give it one A just to make him different and to make people question how to say it his entire life. So I really appreciate that.
You know, it's okay. She wanted to challenge people to think, and we appreciate that.
Mission accomplished. I'll let her know.
Exactly. But Aaron, congratulations, by the way, on Daybreak hitting Netflix. How does it feel that the show that you worked on is finally now available for the masses?
It's a pretty amazing feeling. I've got to be honest. It is like I wish I could be like super cool and chill about it, but it is I'm just very geeky. Like it's like a lot of people worked really hard on this for, you know, over 2 years. So to finally get to this moment is pretty astounding. And to see the reaction that people are having to it and that people are getting all the little insights, jokes, references, all the little details, it's wonderful. It's really, really wonderful.
I was going to say, it certainly has – I love this kind of – Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off little feel that it kind of has to it. I mean, first episode in, it has that Bueller type reference in there.
You know, we have to be really honest about our references. Like, the writer's room, the production staff, we're all really cinema literate people. And we also realize that our audience is the same exact way. We're all just lovers of everything television, film. And so this is a love letter for all of us, hopefully, that we can all get all the references. And if you don't get the references, that you can seek them out and understand like where they came from.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so Daybreak is actually originated, if I'm not mistaken, from a comic, What kind of made you want to adapt this to the big, well, big screen, small screen? Everyone calls TV small screens, but hey, depending on how big your TV is at home, it's the big screen, right?
They're getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Exactly.
So my co-creator and the director of the first two episodes, Brad Payton, was actually the first person to come across the graphic novel by Brian Ralph. And he adapted it into a feature. I was supposed to have a meeting with Brad about another comic book entirely. And our mutual agent at the time sent me Daybreak to read as a sample of what Brad was kind of interested in. And I went into the meeting and I was like, look, I know we're supposed to talk about this comic book, but I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about what you're doing with Daybreak because that is fascinating to me. And the core of what was really the most fascinating to me was this character of Josh at the center of it, which was a character that I hadn't seen before, which was a kid who looked at the apocalypse and looked at the end of the world like it was the best thing that ever happened to him, that he had this unending optimism about life, even though he was living in the dystopian future. And I think that the reason why that resonated with me is because that's how I felt when I was in junior high and high school. I felt I was that, you know, outsider kid, and I think a lot of us feel this way. We all feel like outsiders and feel like, man, if the world just ended, it would be amazing because I could reinvent myself, I could totally be somebody else, and I could get all the cool clothes I want, I could get the cool cars, I could be anybody else and totally redefine myself. And I think that level of wish fulfillment felt new and unique on a trope that we were all in love with and familiar with, but was a new way of looking at a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, and it's it reminds me a little, I know this is maybe a little bit of a stretch, but that one episode of The Twilight Zone where the one guy who just wanted his time to read thought that it was so amazing that no one else was around. And that's kind of how it is for this kid, Josh, where, okay, I pretty much got a blank slate, and now I get to make the most out of this new world.
That's completely correct. I love that episode, that Burgess Meredith episode of Twilight Zone. It was also... I was very heavily influenced, especially when I was a kid. On HBO, almost, it feels like every afternoon, there was a movie called Night of the Comet. It was an 80s horror film that I just thought was a masterpiece where essentially a comet passes by Earth, basically kills all the adults, and the kids, instead of, you know, going all Lord of the Flies on each other and fretting, they run to the mall and get all the clothes that they want. And I was like, because that's what I would do. That's exactly correct. And that movie had just, like, really ingrained itself in my memory, certainly at that time. And I was like, why, you know, in all of these – because it's – having a world without parents, like this is a trope. Like, it's not like we're, like, reinventing the wheel. But what we wanted to was be really honest about – creating something that had a lot of wish fulfillment and a lot of fun and a lot of positive energy, even juxtaposed against, you know, the worst Armageddon possible. The other thing that it really allowed us to do was the metaphor really played for us, because surviving high school does feel like surviving the apocalypse. And every day is a new set of horrors just to get through teachers and parents and social problems and homework and all. It's the best time of your life and it's the worst time of your life, and surviving it takes your friends. So we were able to really create this wonderful kind of coming-of-age metaphor for how we all can survive that time in our lives.
I love the metaphor. I had to say really quick, it's funny that you mentioned that 80s movie, Night of the Comet, you said.
Mm-hmm.
I was just listening to a podcast on it this morning, so that's actually
no way.
Kind of hilarious. Yeah.
it's like in the ether. It's obviously time for it to make a little bit of a strong comeback. It's It's so funny because I was actually also like, there's a lot of references that we do in the show to all manner of 80s and 90s movies, whether it's Mannequin, the Kim Cattrall classic, or I just read an article about how the brilliance of Ninja 3: The Domination, which was one of my favorite ninja films of the 80s, and it's just so interesting how like, oh, Night of the Comet is now on people's minds. I love it. That's amazing.
Why do you think that in our day and age we love 80s references with Night of the Comics, Stranger Things, now Daybreak has all these nods to the 80s? I mean, what is it about the 80s that just people cannot get enough of?
You know, I think that there's a slight nostalgia factor. I think there's so much made at that time that really sunk into, you know, my brain personally, that is like, it's made me the nerd who I am. And I think that one of the things that we are trying to do on our show is really is have a bunch of 80s references. We have 90s references. We have 2000s references. We have 70s references. Like, I feel like I am a Vitamix of nerd culture. And it's all been blended together and poured out. That has become the show. You know, the references run really deep and really far and wide. And it's intentional. It's intentional so that you know, a young audience can watch it and get a lot of the references. But they can also watch it with their parents or an older generation and be like. And when that generation laughs at a joke, when I laugh at a joke with my kids, I can explain, oh, well, this is what that means. And so it can really create a dialogue, is certainly one of the things that we were intending to do.
Right. And with having a show that mixes so many elements in it, what would you say if there were any, say, challenges behind filming Daybreak?
Oh man, all the challenges. You know, here's the best reference that I could do. And Brad Payton, our director, really brought this up. So George Miller, in making Mad Max Fury Road, he basically had something between 8 and 15 years to create the 2 hours. Of what I think is one of the best films of certainly of the last decade, and maybe, you know, it's definitely in my top 10 of all time. I love that movie. It's so well constructed.
It's so good.
It's so good. And they, you know, the level of detail, everything about it, they had all the time to make that shine. And we had to accomplish basically the same world building in basically 4 months. It's an utterly impossible task to accomplish, and I think we were able to accomplish all, you know, so much of what we intended to do. The level of detail in the production design of creating our post-apocalypse, whether it's the tribe tags, the wardrobe, you know, we had amazing production team. Barry Chussid was our production designer. Michael Ground, our wardrobe designer. They really were inspired by what we were attempting to do, and we had to dig deep. And so that when we made the distinctions between the tribes, the tags, our sets, you know, every little detail, the design of our mutant squirrels with their 18 eyes that all blink in unison, like the level of detail is so fine, and it just takes a concentrated effort from so many people to make that happen. And at the same time, the other thing that, just to make it harder for ourselves, you know, we do have these flashbacks. So we also have to build the regular world and make our regular world unique and amazing. And certainly distinctive. You know, it's not every day that you have a 11-year-old girl selling drug-laced slime. So, you know, we had to make make all the designs for the slime and her onesie, which is one of my favorites. Angelica's onesie in episode 3 is one of my favorite wardrobe pieces that we have. You know, So all of it was difficult, but it all paid off. And the best thing about this production has been all of these artists that we get to work with every day are all inspired to do their best job. And I think that at the core of what I get to do with Showrunner is really curate an experience and inspire people to do their best work. And it's so lovely when we all get to have fun and make this world together.
Yeah, and that is always just so amazing when everyone can work so cohesively to create something wonderful. You mentioned also having to construct the quote-unquote real world or the past world before all the adults became obliterated. How was it getting Matthew Broderick in for this? I mean, when I watched it, I certainly was like, oh, my God, Matthew Broderick.
It was a dream. I mean, we wrote the role for him. And, you know, you never, ever get the person that you write the role for. I've been doing this long enough, and you write with somebody in mind, you make the offer, they pass, and then you move on. So the fact that he – and we were told from basically everybody that he was never going to do it, that it was too – you know, it was too referential to Ferris Bueller, that he doesn't do television, that it just wasn't going to happen. But he loved what we were trying to do. And he also loved the idea of playing really against type. I'm assuming you've seen a bunch of the episodes at this point?
I've seen a bunch, but I haven't gotten to the last one.
Okay.
So, you know.
I'm so excited for you to see the last one.
I'm so excited for you to see
definitely what happens and kind of where what happens to Matthew in particular. But, you know, for him, and I'm sure, you know, since this is, you know, obviously a spoiler a little bit, playing against type, playing a villain was really appealing to him. And especially a villain that's hopefully as unique as Baron Triumph, who's one of the, you know, kindest cannibals that I can ever imagine. There's something so twisted about his portrayal of this villain that it was really alluring to him. You know, certainly one of the best moments of my life was when we got on the phone and we started talking about it, and his one objection to all, like, he was like, I'm fine with eating kids, like, that's okay. But, you know, you guys use a lot of bad words in this show, and the you know, not to be utterly crude, but he was taking exceptions to our use of bad words for female genitalia. And, you know, the promise that we made to him was, well, we will be equally as mean about male genitalia, and that seemed to satisfy him as an answer. And we certainly were. We are equal opportunity offenders when it comes to our cursing in this show.
I was just going to say that. As long as it's equal opportunity offending, it's completely fine. I love that.
Exactly. It's like, look, we are all about equal. Like, we do not want to disparage any one group. We want to disparage all groups and make fun of everybody and make fun of ourselves at the same time. So once he was on board with that, he was like, and it's true, like, so if we were heavily weighted to one side of the argument, we needed to make it equal. Absolutely.
I love that. And I love him playing against type, and also that so many people kind of told you that this wouldn't be a project he would be interested in, and there you go, now he's involved in it, and that's just amazing. And then, of course, you know, Colin Ford, first of all, I was saying to a few friends, I was like, you know, he was on this show Supernatural for forever because it was bothering me when I saw his face. I'm like, I know who this kid is. And lo and behold, he was a child actor on the CW's Supernatural. But he's great in it. And you said that you never get who you really want as your first choice. I'm not going to ask you to say who you would want as your first choice, but how did Colin kind of nail this role for you?
So, you know, whether it's Colin or any of the others, and it was actually happened particularly with Colin, You know, our fantastic casting director, Denise Shamian, when she first read the script, she was like, look, one person is going to come in and they are going to nail the role. And you're going to be like, that's them. And for most every single other character, it was absolutely, it was like, you know, Austin walked in, we're like, that's Wesley. And Olivia walked in, we're like, that's Angelica. With Josh, Colin was the one role that we had a little bit of like hesitancy of like, well, we're like, who is this kid? And it's so important that we get the right actor. And the moment that we saw a couple different actors for it. And I'll tell you, the moment that we knew that Colin was our guy was he came in for a callback. And he came in for a callback to actually read for both Turbo and for Josh. Hmm. And the reason why we knew, and he was a very good Turbo. And I have to say, like, the reason why we all agreed, like, why we knew Colin could do it and why he was definitely Josh was because of his ability to be Turbo. He didn't even leave the room. He did his Turbo audition. He sat down. We talked for a second. And then he did his Josh audition. And we're like, he is such a talented actor. He is so fantastic at what he is able to do and how he is able to transform. We just knew that he had the ability to make Josh the charismatic, you know, central love interest of this show, and people would fall in love with him. And he just displayed a level of acting that I rarely ever see. And so that's when we knew that he was our guy.
That's fantastic. That's really great to hear. And it just seems like you really have constructed this really wonderful cast, really have paid attention to so many details. I did not know that it only took, say, 4 months to film this show. That's 10 episodes. That's a very short amount of time. So very much congratulations on all of that. So Daybreak just hit Netflix. Are we hearing anything about a possible second season?
You know, we are hearing some things. Certainly we are working, we are endeavoring towards a second season. There is definitely a lot, we have plans. We have very good plans. You know, and my hope is that everybody just watches it and enjoys it, so that we can come back again.
Awesome. I really hope so as well. And with Daybreak coming out, and it seems to really be garnering a very positive reaction on social media, which is good, you know, for the odds. Besides that, do you have anything else in the works that fans, everyone out there should be on the lookout for?
The one thing I can talk about is there is another show coming on Netflix that I've been involved with called Lock and Key. It's based on Joe Hill's fantastic comic book that is one of my favorite comic books ever. It's an incredible series. It'll be coming out in 2020. Everybody needs to watch that as well.
That's awesome. I love that you're adapting all of these comic books. So before I let you go, I have one question to ask. From either the Marvel or DC universe, what is a story or a character that you personally would love to bring out on the big screen?
Oh, my God. There's so many. I will limit it to two.
Okay.
I'll tell you, it's one from each because they're my key favorites. I would love to do a Green Lantern, whether it's series or film, for DC. I just adore Green Lantern and the whole universe. And I'm ready for my Kitty Pryde movie. I know people were working on it. I would love to see a Kitty Pryde movie. Kitty Pryde was my hero growing up, you know, because she was the Jewish X-Man, and I was like, yes, that is, I think that everybody's ready for a Kitty Pryde movie.
I think not only is everyone ready for a Kitty Pryde movie, but I think everyone and their mother pretty much is ready for a Green Lantern movie or TV show. Ever since Ryan Reynolds' movie, people have been, okay, when is Green Lanterns coming back? So I'm not sure when DC is going to do that. I guess we all have to kind of hold our breath a little, but hey, who knows? But
exactly.
Aaron, it has been absolutely wonderful speaking with you today. I'm really happy to have gotten the chance to do so, and I really hope that all the listeners out there watch Daybreak because it's a lot of fun. I love new twists on a zombie apocalypse, so everyone please check that out. And Aaron, thank you again.
Yeah, such a pleasure. Thank you so much. It was awesome being with you.
Awesome. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.